Brand new luxury apartments. If you're in the market, listen. Brand new luxury apartments. Champion has a new property, River Park of Dublin, which is a mile south of Dublin. Location is everything. Spacious 1, 2, and 3 bedroom homes, designer finishes, resort style amenities, exceptional customer service. That's Champion. Champion's brand new luxury apartments, River Park of Dublin. Now do something about it. Visit livewithchampion.com. Livewithchampion.com.
This is CBS Eye on the World with John Batchelor. Here's John Batchelor.
Joined by Seth Frantzman of the Jerusalem Post and of the Foundation for the Defense of Democracies. The war, South and North, and then there is the larger story of the adversaries throughout the Mediterranean basin. We begin, however, in Gaza. Seth, a very good evening to you. Thank you for this. Your most recent report identifies a three-pronged approach by the IDF to the remains of Gaza. That would be chiefly, we hear again and again about Rafah. What can you tell us about the plans for the next phase of operations? Good evening to you.
Good evening to you. I think that what we're seeing now is that Israel is pressing into parts of Rafah, which is next to the border with Egypt in southern Gaza. It's a slowly progressing campaign because they're trying to get the civilians to leave the neighborhoods. But the infantry and the armored column is moving forward, and I think they will continue to press into this area. I think around 300,000 people have been evacuated. So that's kind of one prong if you look at the southern part of Gaza. And then Israel has launched two different offensives over the last week, one of which is into Jabalia in northern Gaza. Jabalia is a kind of urban neighborhood and also a refugee camp, or historically refugee camp, next to Gaza City. And the IDF is also operating there with the 98th Division, which is the same IDF division that cleared Khan Yunis of Hamas. And the IDF is also operating in a neighborhood called Zaytun, which is next to Gaza City. So those are three different areas. It's a complicated operation. It's a whole number. It's more units in Gaza than probably have been there since March or so, because the IDF kind of did a drawdown in April and early May. So it's an important series of operations. It puts Hamas probably a bit on the defensive in a whole bunch of areas because Hamas was kind of feeling that it was winning. So that's, I think, where we are at the moment.
The last time we talked, I learned from you that Rafah, at the southernmost part of the Gaza Strip, may very well have exit tunnels to Sinai. And so I was imagining simply that Hamas would leave. But you made the very careful point that the tunnels run through all of the region, and because they're not in Rafah doesn't mean they're not back at Khan Yunis or back at Gaza City, or now I'm learning from you, Zaytun, the neighborhood Zaytun, and also Jabalia. Does that mean that we're looking not just at Rafah anymore, we're looking at infiltration throughout the whole of Gaza, even the part of that was presumed cleared?
Well, I think that Hamas has returned everywhere in Gaza that the IDF isn't. I mean, you know, nature abhors a vacuum. So if you take away one thing, something else will be there. And in the case of Hamas, this is an authoritarian, you know, terrorist cartel type movement that has been running Gaza for a very long time, you know, some 15 years or more. And it has deep roots in the society. And so just because an IDF infantry division moves into a neighborhood and clears out, you know, the guys on the surface, doesn't mean that they clear out all the Hamas members. So the second that they reduce the pressure, they leave. All these Hamas guys just come back. So I think it's very difficult if Israel's not willing to sit in these neighborhoods and it's not willing to find an alternative, then Hamas will return. Because there's no, so far the evidence shows that no one else is willing to stand up and take responsibility or take control.
I want to understand also about Rafah, because the reporting we have here, Seth, is all Rafah, 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 as if this is the last battle of the last war of the last planet. And there's something about it that suggests science fiction. The picture you're giving, of course, is much more complicated. And and less final, more like a process, ongoing process, as Hamas continues to fight beyond the death. They fight to a point where they're looking for some kind of political or diplomatic advantage. So should I now say that this extreme diplomatic pressure being brought on Israel's government about Rafah is inarticulate pressure? The people who are speaking these things about, if you go into Rafah, then we will do this to you. They simply are not looking at the battle map you've described.
Well, I think that the Rafah is very important in a sense, because it sits on the Egyptian border. So getting rid of the Hamas control in Rafah stops Hamas from being able to resupply itself with weapons through tunnels or other methods of smuggling. And it removes the Hamas ability to control all the aid that was coming from southern, from Egypt. That's important to get Hamas away from the kind of aid wagon that it's been hijacking. So that's one thing. But in the end of the day, there is an international obsession with Rafah that seems to go far beyond logic, which is that, as we just discussed, the IDF has been operating in other areas of Gaza City and no one seems to mind. It does appear that Hamas is able to influence the international community, probably through the fact that it has friends in high places, in places like Doha and Qatar or Ankara in Turkey or other places. And it probably uses those friends to influence some media reports or some Westerners to try to stop the IDF from going to Rafah so that Hamas can continue to sit there. I mean, so it seems that Hamas is the one that has something to hide. There's something there that it's trying to hide, because otherwise Hamas would be making a big issue with other parts of Gaza, I think.
Let's look at the two things that are new to me. You mentioned Jabalia and Zeitun. Do they look like other parts, the tall concrete towers now collapsed with roadways cut through the rubble? Is that what they look like?
I don't know. I was in Jabalia, actually, when I was there, But yeah, there were some things that were damaged. Some buildings were burned inside. Some buildings were just like a building that was empty of residents. So it was a mixed bag. I mean, you imagine a densely populated area, including an area that was once a refugee camp. So the houses are all built one on top of the other and very close together. So I don't think it's as heavily damaged as other parts of Gaza. Perhaps it was not the earliest part of the campaign. It was in December that Israel went in there. So it perhaps was not quite as badly damaged as some areas, but there are areas that are damaged there. And then Zeitun, again, I don't think it was as badly damaged. The IDF cleared it in late November and then in February. But I think Zeitun neighborhood, parts of it is not, big towers is not as built up. But, again, there's been three rounds of battles in Zeitun now. So some of it must be pretty badly damaged. There's a lack of information probably on that. And it's also probably hard to determine when someone says, 30,000 homes or whatever have been damaged. It's like, okay, well, what do you define as damage? Is it unlivable, or is it, got a bit of shelling hit one of the apartments or something?
All right, we have Zeitun. I'll pull up pictures of this because I need to visualize it. We have Jabalia. Let's go back down to Rafah. In conversations over these last weeks since we last talked, Seth, I've been given to understand that it is assumed that there are tunnels underneath the international border into Sinai, and that those tunnels are a problem for Israel and for Egypt. They must be either sealed or dealt with. Is there any plan to cross into Egypt and deal with the other side of the tunnels?
Well, no, there's no chance that Israel would operate in Egypt, obviously. So the Egyptians are, find it they're very sensitive to this issue. They don't want Israeli tanks running around the border. They claim that it's a violation of the peace treaty, that Israel is only supposed to have several infantry battalions along the border area. They don't like the big, heavy presence there. But in the end of the day, someone has to find the tunnels, if there are tunnels. Now, if there are not big tunnels there, then the big question mark is, where did all the weapons come from for Hamas? And if it's not a tunnel, it means it came over land in a truck. It probably didn't come by air, obviously, or by boat, I hope. So then that would lead to other more serious questions as to whether things were smuggled into Gaza just totally openly in trucks. So one would kind of hope that actually the smuggling is in a tunnel, because at least that is ostensibly illegal and clandestine. Even if the Egyptians can have a, you know, they can have plausible deniability and say, well, we just didn't know this tunnel was here. But if it turns out that the stuff was coming in on trucks, then that's a big issue for what Israel and the Egyptians and everyone else knew about. So let's hope that they find tunnels, because there should be something there. Because otherwise, how did Hamas become probably one of the most heavily armed states per capita in the world? And by arms, I mean like small arms. But I think there's more small arms in Gaza probably per capita than most places in the world.
Are the convoys still coming in from the Egyptian border? We were told that they were stopped momentarily in the first stages of the probe last week. Has the convoy started rolling again?
So the Hamas fired rockets at the Israeli crossing, Kerem Shalom, which is next to the Egyptian border where trucks enter Gaza. Israel closed it for a few days and then opened it, and then Hamas kept firing mortars and rockets at it, but Israel keeps it open. The Egyptians closed the Rafah crossing from their side when the Israeli tanks took it over, which I think was about May 7th. So the Egyptians apparently have not wanted to reopen it because they don't like the idea that the Israelis are sitting there on the other side, and they claim that it's dangerous. They have a whole litany of complaints. So it's not clear if pressure will eventually build on them to improve the humanitarian situation and let the trucks through, which would be helpful for Gaza, obviously.
I'm speaking to Seth Frantzman, the Jerusalem Post correspondent on the war fighting in Israel. We've been concentrating on Gaza, the Gaza operation. We're going to head to Hezbollah, but first, a check. Hostages, is it now part of the conversation in these three operations you're identifying? Or is that matter no longer at issue and the IDF is, its mission is to destroy Hamas?
Officially, Israel has always said that it wants to get the hostages back, that that's what it's doing. But, you know, when you look at the actual operations, it's not entirely clear if that's a focus or if the troops that are there are even necessarily trained to deal with the hostage aspect, in the sense that an average infantry battalion commander is not an expert in hostage negotiations. So it would appear to me that since the beginning of the war, Israel has sort of bifurcated the effort of the hostages are one thing, and there's a track that involves that, and that track is mostly with Egypt and Qatar and America, and with Hamas sitting in Qatar and kind of talking from the back room. And then there's another track, which is the military track. And the two do not always have a kind of Clausewitzian logic in which they work together. Even though Israel has said military pressure will bring release of hostages, the fact is that Israel reduced the pressure in December, January, February, partly because of American pressure to reduce the pressure. Well, then therefore you'd reduce the pressure, then the hostage deal doesn't happen. So it's a bit of a problematic crossroads. But now Israel is increasing the pressure again. So in theory, the hostage talks could improve. But we've not heard that the talks have improved at all.
Seth Frantzman, Jerusalem Post correspondent, and also Foundation for the Defense of Democracy, where you can read his reporting on the Long War Journal. We're going north. This is CBS Eye on the World. I'm John Batchelor.
Brand new luxury apartments. If you're in the market, listen, brand new luxury apartments. Champion has a new property, River Park of Dublin, which is a mile south of Dublin. Location is everything. Spacious 1, 2, and 3 bedroom homes, designer finishes, resort style amenities, exceptional customer service. That's Champion. Champion's brand new luxury apartments, River Park of Dublin. Now do something about it. Visit livewithchampion.com. Livewithchampion.com.
Let's be real. Life happens. Kids spill. Pets shed. And accidents are inevitable. Find a sofa that can keep up at washablesofas.com. Starting at just $699, our sofas are fully machine washable inside and out, so you can say goodbye to stains and hello to worry-free living. Made with liquid and stain-resistant fabrics, they're kid-proof, pet-friendly, and built for everyday life. Plus, changeable fabric covers let you refresh your sofa whenever you want. Need flexibility? Our modular design lets you rearrange your sofa anytime to fit your space, whether it's a growing family room or a cozy apartment. Plus, they're earth-friendly and trusted by over 200,000 happy customers. It's time to upgrade to a stress-free, mess-proof sofa. Visit washablesofas.com today and save. That's washablesofas.com. Offers are subject to change and certain restrictions may apply.
Time is precious, and so are our pets. So time with our pets is extra precious. That's why we started Dutch. Dutch provides 24/7 access to licensed vets with unlimited virtual visits and follow-ups for up to 5 pets. You can message a vet at any time and schedule a video visit the same day. Our vets can even prescribe medication for many ailments, and shipping is always free. With Dutch, you'll get more time with your pets and year-round peace of mind when it comes to their vet care.